Anyway, I was going to talk about a way of looking at Buddhist training. And one of the most famous lines in Mahayana Buddhism is from the Scripture of Great Wisdom, often translated as the Heart Sutra. And the famous line is usually translated as "form is empty, empty is form." Now, Reverend Master Akshay Jiyu actually didn't really like the whole way Buddhists use emptiness. However, on the other hand, I realized so we Shi Chuishi use pure, form is pure, pure is form. However, emptiness actually in some ways, in terms of conceptually, works better. Because actually what you want is the opposites are the same. Form is empty. Well, pure actually isn't quite the opposite. So, and empty is form. And it's very kind of important to notice, to kind of understand, in a way, what that emptiness is talking about, because that's what she was responding to as the negative, is emptiness in Buddhism isn't just the absence of things, it's actually the fullness of things. And often one of the character we often translate as empty, is shunyata, which actually can be translated from the Sanskrit as the fullness of emptiness. And one way to kind of view this that I always like, that I remember reading in the Theravada monk Ajahn Sumedho talked about it as, is actually he liked using the concept of space and form. And space, in a way, is empty, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, this is, take away this building, there's still space. And no matter how you picture things, there's both space, and within the space is all the forms. Everything you can think about appears in space. In fact, from my almost completely forgotten, but I do remember this fact from my undergraduate year studying philosophy, which is one of my majors, was Immanuel Kant had a famous thing that he said, you can't conceive of things without space. It's a necessarily construct of thought to have space. There has to be a spatial dimension. You know, you can't picture a reality that isn't spatial. But also, in a way, space stands a lot for what we're trying to do in our practice, which is actually what we're often doing most of life is noticing all the form, noticing the objects of our mind, the thoughts that appear, and all the rest. And it's like a house appearing in space or something appearing in space. And the only way we notice space is by withdrawing our attention from the object to notice really, you know, what isn't an object, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, you can't notice space by concentrating on the couch. You have to notice space by seeing the couch in a context of space. And it's also impossible to conceive of space not being boundless. Our mind can't picture a bounded space because we just picture, well, there's empty space next to the space. You know, space, the way our minds work, has to be boundless. And just like space by its nature has to be peaceful. You can't come up with, you know, it's not the space that's the problem. It's what's in the space. And in a way, it's a good image of our minds. If we can notice, now if you, I remember I was just doing meditation instruction with actually something I don't get that often here. A high school girl came by for instruction. And she just mentioned how her mind's just so busy. And she has trouble even concentrating on anything because her mind's racing around. I think we can relate to that. You know, in fact, it brings me back to my high school years when I purposely didn't try to concentrate. You know, I tuned things out. You know, I spent a lot of time tuning things out and letting my mind drift. You know, sitting in classes, daydreaming. Did a lot of that in, you know, school. But anyway, so I explained to her meditation and and have her just sit for 15 minutes. And so she gets up and I say, okay, I bet you this was hard. And she goes, yes, this was hard. I said, I bet you feel more peaceful now than when you sat down. And she smiled and said, yes. You know, because actually, if you really think about it, it can be hard. But then you actually do feel, in a way, when we hold so strongly to our thoughts, we really feel bounded by our karma. When we let go of the thoughts, in a way, there's space around it. You know, we see it in a bigger context, which is the whole point of training. When we suffer, it's always seeing things in the narrow context. And the more spacious our mind is, the more spacious our heart is, the more we are actually not going to be bound by what appears in the mind, in the heart. And when we just being aware of space in a way, we can't be totally absorbed in the objects in the space. The same way in meditation, if you're completely absorbed in the thought, there's no space around it. You are the thought. You are the feeling. And you feel completely bound by it. And the more you open the space, and the space in Buddhism isn't one of the reasons Rama Sadhu didn't like the word emptiness, is actually it's not empty. If you let go of things, there's something that's filling all the space. That's a living, you know, that can be felt. It's like in Buddhism, there's a nice teaching called the three bodies of the Buddha. And one body is the Dharmakaya, which is the absolute. All is one. The boundless. And actually, you can't conceive of the Dharmakaya. Any, you know, it's just boundless. Your mind can't conceive of all is one. You know, it just isn't possible. You know, it becomes meaningless. But that doesn't mean it's not real. It just means your mind can't grasp it in a way because the mind can't grasp something being boundless. All it can grasp is what's there. However, the Sambhogakaya is called in Buddhism the bliss-bestowing body of the Buddha. And the fact that whatever we experience has to come through something. You know, it's not just emptiness. It has to come in some way that we can experience it and feel it. The same way as actually if you have a good meditation, you feel something, but it's not necessarily anything you can grasp with your hand, your mind. You know, there's something positive, but you can't, it's not something that you can really grasp in the way that we're doing it. And the Sambhogakaya means you have all sorts of experiences, feelings, thoughts that accompany meditation, that accompany spiritual life. You know, you can feel the presence of something. You can feel something move. You can feel something living in your heart. It's like a classic image is, you know, there's a famous image in Buddhism that they use a lot of the 18 arhats. Of representing different aspects of training, very common in a large monastery, they'd be an arhant hall. And one of them has always, he's ripped open, not literally, but almost symbolically, ripped open his stomach, and there's a Buddha living right in his hara, right here. And you always see it, and it's, you know, something that kind of, that you feel the presence of when you practice. But actually, that's form, and because we have to experience it through form, but then there's something boundless. And you realize that that's just a way of looking at it. It's not the deepest reality. The deepest reality is nothing's being bounded. And in a way, everything is just that space, that emptiness. But due to form, we have form. And everything in, you know, and just like, space is neutral, isn't it? Like in our life, we have, this is my space. But of course, actually, you don't own space. You know, we built the priory, you know, through, we're paying taxes in Albany, not much, but fees at least in Albany. you know, and according to the government, I own this space. But of course, this is completely arbitrary. It's like when when the Europeans came to North America, they made deals with the Indians for space. And of course, the Indians, nobody owns anything. You know, it was like meaningless saying, this is now mine. When they just moved through, you know, they didn't have possessed space. I mean, the tribes would control areas, but they didn't possess, you know, that concept wasn't there. And of course, in our, you know, this room is a box holding this space in. And we say, okay, I own this space, but of course, you know, this could wash away. You know what I mean? It's like the space isn't being bound by me. And space isn't bound by any objects or anything else. It's unbounded. And in a way, when we meditate and we practice, there's a longing for that which is unbounded. We feel the restrictions of this form, of birth and death, of life, of the fact that we have a liking, we want this and we don't want that. And all these things bound us in a way that makes us very uncomfortable. That's why the First Noble Truths, dukkha, suffering exists, because it's actually uncomfortable being bound, you know. And we're longing for liberation. And the liberation is being liberated from that which is being bound. And amazingly enough, we find that by letting things go more and more and allowing more openness and space in our hearts and in our minds. Just like, think of people you know who everything binds them. You know, somebody who everything annoys or everything is restricting, and they just feel completely bound by traffic, by the people around them, by politics, by everything they basically have to put up with because they don't control all of it. And somebody who's doing well spiritually will be unbounded by all those circumstances. Their mind sees the object, recognizes this is good, this is bad. This feels good, this feels bad. But they're not being bounded by it. And in that space, when you let go of things, there's a fullness in it that fills us. And we realize that it's not empty. What our heart really wants is what fills that empty space, and which is unbounded.
So it's kind of like the space that is here, that is it's defined by this, the walls and the people and the characteristics of this space. We say that there's this space here, but actually the space is continuous. The space inside the building is same as the space outside. It's continuous, but for convenience and because of attachment, we define this space as being the characteristics of this room, and that is this as being an entity, but actually it's...
Oh, yeah. The space isn't really defined. You know, we're making an artificial division, just like there's an artificial division that there's me and you. You know, this is my space because it's in me, you know, just like... But it's just, you know, we're just moving through space, and the space isn't being bound by it. And if we let go of if we identify with me, then everything that happens to me isn't just space. It's like, this is the important thing. Well, in a spacious mind, you realize, you know, like they'll say in Buddhism, you know, things, thus shall you think of this fleeting world, a bubble in a stream, a child's laugh, a phantasm, a dream. You know, what is really real? This body's going to come and go. It temporarily encloses something, but it's not very solid. You know, it's, you know, I think it's 85% water. You know, and too many cookies, no. Cookies and water, no. People who that probably counts. You know, it's like you look at somebody and you realize he's holding the space together with transformed donuts. Yeah, and a narrow, and that's why that image, a narrow mind, is restricted and it has very little space, you know, and you can feel this narrow point of view, you know, just using those things in our language, a narrow mind, a narrow heart, a narrow attitude of mind that just thinks, oh, whatever I think is the way things are, without a spacious mind that actually goes, oh, there's endless ways to look at everything. Just like religious life, you know, Buddhism is nice because it doesn't teach. It's like, oh, this is the one truth. It's just a way of looking at things, as in Buddhism, a tool. From my point of view, a very good tool, but just a tool. You know, a better tool than all those other ways of looking at things are, I wouldn't be doing this or following this. But it's still just a tool. You know, just, you know, as that saying in Buddhism, you know, and a spacious, what we want is a spacious mind and heart that has room for everything in it. That, you know, that's what we're trying to do in training. Whatever happens, we have space for it. You know, whether it's my suffering, your suffering, the world, things falling apart, things coming together, the good, the bad, you know, if you don't try to hold on to it, there's space for everything. You know, if you try to hold on to it, suddenly you run out of space. You know, it's suddenly you're filled with your opinions, you're filled with your desires. And it's amazing. If you have a strong enough desire, you don't even care about anything else. You know what I'm talking about? Like, if you really get focused on, I have to have this, suddenly everything else can fall away. It's like, all I care about is laying this floor. No, I'm kidding. But I can suddenly see, you know, kind of see that as the mind. And our real mind that we're tapping into and our real heart is unbounded. It's not limited by any circumstances, by any feelings, by any judgments. You know, if we don't hold on to things, it's actually not that affected by what comes in and out of it any more than the space in this room is really affected by whether we have a carpet or a laminate floor. You know, it's like, I don't care. you know, and the only reason anybody cares is we, you know, I have my preferences, you know, just like quite a while back, you know, now I was told that I'm allergic to dust mites, so one of the reasons we, and cats. And I thought, it's nice to have surfaces that clean better. So at least if I have a cat, I don't have to, the hair can get out of the smooth floor so much easier than, you know. Than, and there's some nice things in your space too, so. Like I have Molly in my space. No.
She's in all of our visual space.
Yeah. You know, and that's why, in a way, we're trying to look at our life and what happens to us in terms of a boundless space, the boundless life of Buddha. You know, even the kind of very religious title or message you gave to our first book, Zen is Eternal Life. And what she was really talking about wasn't the eternal life, like, oh God, Kinray's going to go on forever. God, I actually find that rather depressing. You know, I don't really want to go on forever. I want to let Kinray fall away and make what's real go on, you know, go on forever, which... You know, as the Buddha kind of said on his enlightenment, it's just like a drop of water slipping into the sea. Life, his life, you know, and it's not bad being the sea, you know, and it's not so great being a drop of water. And, you know, and the funny thing is, and they're using that image of space, there's nothing good or bad about space. You can't be fascinated by space. You know what I mean? It's like, it would be like actually being fascinated by that wall, unless, you know, it's like, and unless it has some interesting pattern on it, how do you, you know what I mean? Which I've had where I did get fascinated by the wall. You know, in fact, I remember staring at an electrical outlet and realizing this is getting distracting. But, you know, if you just look at it as space, there's nothing you can really, the mind can really grasp in the space. And it's important to realize that form and space are a couple. One only has meaning with the other. You know, you can't have one without the other. And actually, there's no meaning of space without form. That's why in Buddhism, form is empty. But also, empty is form. And it's even like in modern physics, they say space doesn't have meaning without objects. You know, in terms of modern physics, there's no space that's set, you know, that isn't in relationship to things. In fact, that's why they kind of call it space-time continuum. And it's a relation to what's in it. Once you get away from any object, there's no longer, it's meaningless, you know, from a physics point of view, they say it's meaningless to talk about just space alone. You know, the objects in a way make the space. You know, that's why, you know, when, you know, the Big Bang usually has that the space and the objects came together. The universe came, you know, and even expanded, you know, that very concept they have, the expanding universe. And they said it's meaningless to think of it in terms of space without something, you know, relationship with something, just that empty. This is meaningless, you know, from that point of view.
So what is time, then?
That's for another class. Let me stick to my notes, Ben.
but you know what? I was just thinking that it's a good metaphor because space is immune to time. Time is a construct. And change, too. I mean, you can change space, but does it change much? I mean, it really
Yeah, it isn't. They do go together. And time is the temporal element that's changing the forms within the space. And that's really what time is.
Changing forms.
Yeah. I mean, the space inherently is not changed by it, except the space is actually in relation to the form. So in some ways, it has a relationship, you know, it's not completely separate from it, just like in the Big Bang, in a way, space and forms were both simultaneously created, you know, because one needed the, you know, they're two sides of really the same thing. And time is just the way things change, but in a way, space isn't fundamentally changing. You know, and the time is just getting caught up in the forms within the space. You know, once you stop doing it, things become timeless. You know, once you start holding on to the change, nothing's really changed. You know, it's be like watching, you know, looking at the surface of the ocean. It keeps moving, but...
Well, if it's continual change, then change is absorbed and disappears. I mean,
and everything is in continual change. That's the principle of transience, you know, principle of everything is always changing. Even if the time spans thing, you know, seems enormous to us, you know, just like the continents moving at an inch a year, you know, they float all over the world, but they're still, from our point of view, they're not real, you know, we didn't even conceive of the change, but they actually are changing, you know, the just like the Himalayas are still getting higher. Yeah, the Indian subcontinent is pushing into the main continent at the Himalayas, and it's still moving in that direction. So the mountains are going to keep getting bigger for, I don't know, for quite a, you know, for another long, long time.
Until India is vertical.
Then it's going to be really hard for them to climb Everest.
Yeah, all these people are climbing. Dope, I should have waited.
You see, it's kind of like a ride. You stay in the top and you keep going higher and higher. Just moving like a quarter. You know, and they probably have a measurement how much higher it gets each year, but it's, you know, I bet you they do have that, how much the mountains are rising, but I'm sure it's a tiny amount because erosion actually hits too, you know, so we'll neutralize a lot of that effect. But, and in a way, silence is another way of looking at almost the same thing as space. All sounds appear and disappear within silence. But the only way you notice silence is by letting go of listening to the sounds. You know, if you follow what I mean, you know, you can't hear silent. You can't be paying so much attention to the sound to hear the lack of sound. And in a way, that's what we're trying to do in... You know, and that's why we have to kind of silence our thoughts to hear the silence that's always enfolding us. And most of the time, most of us are making so much inner noise that that's all we're hearing. You know, I mean, our brains keep, at least my brain, you know, generates a lot of chunk. You know, if it's like it doesn't want to shut up most of the time. You know, and part of training is learning shut up. You know, listen to something other than this outflow of really aversion and desire, which is really what my mind's doing most of the time. Is I want this, I like this, I don't. You know, just stuff or just normal spam. You know, just junk. You know.
Space junk.
What?
Space junk.
Yeah. Yeah, just. You know, and it's, and that's why, in a way, whatever the thought or the feeling arises, we're trying to notice the space around it. See how it arises from nothing and goes back to nothing. And that's actually one of the fundamental teachings of that liberates us from Buddhism. If we hold on to it, we don't see things coming from nothing and going back to nothing. And we identify it and it becomes a problem. As we train, we're supposed to actually see the transience, which is seeing, God, I didn't have that feeling. It arose. They said something. Suddenly I had the feeling arise. And actually, if I pay attention, it actually does go away if I don't keep grasping it. I mean, you can keep it going, but if you really pay attention, suddenly I'm not angry anymore. What happened? Went back to nothingness. And, you know, in this silence, it's space around all our obsessions, our fears. You know, and there's something open and unbounded around everything. Just like no matter how noisy our mind is, there's always silence. All we have to do is listen. You know, just like there's always space. And actually our heart has to kind of learn that in a way we are not really just this bag of karma, but we are actually also the space and the silence. And the Buddha lives within that space and silence that fills everything, which is the life, you know, which fills things. So it's actually not empty of things in the way, and it's not empty in the way that our mind conceives of being empty. You know, and that's why when people let go of things, something fills them that's very positive. You know, there's something filling everything. You know, what's, you know, I remember one Christian, I remember writing that when, as the heart opens, the water starts flooding and filling, the whole water world becomes the water of compassion. And there's nothing outside that water. You know, in this, you know, which is a nice way that when we do let go, something fills everything. And actually there's a completeness and a wholeness that wouldn't be if it was just this poor self facing this empty, cruel realm. Like this poor me floating in empty space, basically wanting to be something and not liking the fact that in terms of reality, actually you're nothing. You know, I'm not actually any more significant than Molly or that bug walking along the thing or the virus infecting me. You know, it's just stuff. And it's all the life of Buddha. You know, and it's... You know, just like we're not... And it's good to look at things properly because we're not battling our desires, battling our fears, battling evil. We're just letting go of it and seeing all this stuff arise and pass in something that's boundless. You know, and that frees us because, you know, the stuff arises, desires arise, fears arise, doubts arise, everything arises. But if you can see it just arise and pass, there's something boundless that embraces it all and isn't troubled by it any more than this room's troubled by whatever I bring into it. You know, it's like the space here isn't going to be upset even when I, like, you know, it's like I moved everything from my room into another room so that other room is completely full of stuff. It's like nothing in it was saying, no, no, I can't handle another box. And patience and acceptance are the way we express that there's something unbounded. By not making a problem out of what comes into our space. Patience. Whatever's there, whether it's somebody else's difficulty, my difficulty, some fear, some desire. It's all just entering this space. And it's okay. And acceptance. It's not a problem whatever comes into my space. In fact, I'm trying not to have space, in a sense. It's not my space. Just like I try not to make anything my problem. You know, that's a part of training. It's just a problem. It's just something to deal with. Just like the other day, you know, just like last night, I'm doing a lot of work this week, and I checked my email, and I realized my email hasn't been working for a couple of days. I haven't been able to get email. I mean, nobody's written to me for 2 days, and I think something isn't right here. I at least get junk every day. And, you know, and I just had to kind of go, okay, the world will exist. It's, you know, without it and sort it out. And actually, Kai, who's in Chicago, kind of was doing something and had to tell me how to get my email. So I contacted her, and late at night I checked my email, and the address that did work, I did have an email address that worked. It just wasn't the priority ones. You know, got the information of how, of what I need to do to change my settings so I can still get email. Because we switched our web provider, and who actually also supports our email. So I kind of thought this could happen. And it's one of those things that can happen that I don't have any understanding what it's, how all of this works and what exactly do we do, because I've never done this, you know, deal with how we set these things up and all the rest. I'm luckily giving that task to somebody else who could have that go into their space of what they need to do in life rather than have me struggle with the email settings and, you know, how do you configure your computer. Anyway, anybody have anything?
certain gimmick.
Yeah.
I kind of noticed that when things sort of, when there has been some falling away, there's often a rebound effect of like, oh my God, I want some substance. Or, you know, something that, if I stop worrying about certain things that I've always worried about, it feels, you know, it's kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the aspects of it is we're often comfortable with our space.
Yeah.
Our problem. Think of it. Think of how we all know and ourselves kind of held on to some of our suffering, held on to our wounds. You know, like, God, this person did this to me. And it's actually comforting in a way to say, God, I had such a lousy, you know, how could that person have done that? And you kind of nurture it. You know, you hold it on there and it becomes part of you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, actually not being a victim can be very, like, what do I do now? And it's hard. And it's hard to let go of things that are part of us because in a way they are part of us. That wound is part of me. I don't want to let go of it. I want to, you know, that's an important part of me. You know, I've built my life on being, you know, on this problem.
Reverend Henry, like personally, I've had this experience of creating this belief system of that worry equals love. And so to let go of the worrying and then be in relationship with these intimate relationships where I so want it, and it's not there anymore. I mean, I can conjure it up. I notice my mind wanting to do it, but it's really, I mean, letting go of worry. It's like I can't imagine my life without it, you know. So then it feels like I want to get a hold of it again.
Yeah. Well, again, it's kind of like a lot of patterns, just like a desire of. A lot of desires and worries and fears. What we have to do is be willing to see what we're actually doing and then get in touch with, like, instead of getting in touch with the worry, get in touch with the fact that the love. You know what I mean? It's like we care about this person. We don't need the worry to make us care. All you have to do is think, if something happens to them, do I care? You know, do I deeply care about this person? Do I love them? And it's there. So, and you have to not hold on to the, you know, the deluded ways we kind of relate to things, and kind of just trust. And not have that possessive love that things have to be a certain way, which is part of it. It's not just a love. It's like they become part of you and you only accept a very narrow aspect of reality. Other than the fact that actually it's okay. Things can fall apart. You know, it's like it's okay. Because the real love that we're trying is, again, an unbounded love. When we have a bounded love, it has to be accompanied by fear and worry. While the real love is actually not, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like, you know, where somebody asked the Buddhist teacher, my mother doesn't let me love her. And the teacher said, nothing can ever stop a heart from loving. You know, and there's no, our love isn't being bounded by the objects of our love. You know, if we really want to love this, you know, there's plenty, you know, there won't ever lack. Even if we're by ourselves, there's no lack of things to love. You know, it's a nice saying of the Buddha, that you can search the whole universe and you'll never find a being more worthy of being loved than yourself. But of course that's true of everything, you know, because everything is equally worthy of it. And we have to kind of not limit things so we can just see things in a way that they're, everything's arising and passing in this boundless space. And we don't have to attach to anything, but our heart still connects to things. And the boundless heart is the boundless heart that loves and cares for everything that appears in that mirror of life. You know, it's all part of you. You know, it's like somebody just reading a book and talking about it, but the woman in the book talks about being in a concentration camp where our heart just feels everything. You know, the plants growing, the trees, the way everything is all part of her. You know, and in a way, everything is part of us, so we don't have to worry about the pieces that enter and leave so much, and we're not being diminished by it.
I just want to talk about time, letting go this time. And then you say, oh, I've got to wait and wait, because things that I was, you know, hanging on to went away in a year, or it takes a year. So time, we have to think about time. How do you deal with time?
All you can do is how the speed that things happen or how well we do it is really not up to us. All we can do is make the effort to do our best in the moment, in what's happening, and accept that that's all we can do. The time aspect of it is outside, you know, this could be our last day, so, you know, I remember once saying something like this, and we had a little earthquake. And I just thought, you know, special effects, you know. The big one could come, and this whole floor could collapse, and our lives could be transformed. But all you can do is each moment, what is boundless is there, and we can let go and try to allow the spaciousness and the silence to fill us wherever we are. And when we see something we're holding on to in that space, we work at letting go of it. And it's not within our power to decide how easily it will be to let go of the objects that we're holding on so hard to. It's just, all we can do is what we can do. You know, I can't tell myself, when is this thing that's bothering me so much going to stop bothering me so much, when I'm, you know, and if you think about it, it's not up to you. All you can do is make the right choice. In the moment, though, you have a choice. You know, I'm worrying about this right now. I can let go of it. And I don't control when it's going to pop back up again, but I can keep moment by moment working at letting go of it, and that's Buddhist training.
I remember one time going through some difficulty and working with you, going for refuge. I mean, that was like such a wonderful teaching. It's like I really wanted something and I couldn't get it. And Reverend Master Kinray just pointed me to taking refuge. I take refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, refuge in the Sangha. And it's been with me ever since, both in good times as well as difficult times.
Well, good. Yeah, we want it in good times. Or else training doesn't go very far. You know, I suffer, I train, then I stop training. And there are people who do that. So there's people who kind of, every time life gets easy, they drift away, and then a problem comes up and they pop back up, and, you know, you have to kind of keep at it. Anyway, I'd probably let people I'm going to call it quits. Anyway, nice to see everyone.
Thank you.